This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's our third show for Movember. It's Men's Health Awareness Month. And, well, we spoke about prostate cancer, testicular cancer in the first week. In the second week, we spoke about mental health amongst middle-aged men. And, of course, Dr. George Lee back in the studio to continue his series on Movember
for mankind.
And today, of course, it's Universal Children's Day as well. So our topic today is fertility.
To make more children.
Exactly, you know. And we have in the studio with us Dr. Prashant Natkarni, our fertility specialist, who will join us, help us understand male fertility issues. How are you, Dr. Prashant?
I'm fine, thank you.
See, we're already going to have a fantastic time. We're going to have a wonderful show.
How would you describe male fertility? Or shall I say, I hate using the word infertility, but, you know, male fertility, what does it entail?
Essentially, fertility is just trying to have a baby, right? So,
is it?
Yeah, it is.
Everything about having a baby.
You're not talking about male health, which is Movember. You're talking about male fertility. Fertility is just, you know.
I'm glad you're not talking about it, because every time you mention the Movember and then you just look at my moustache and then kind of say, oh, it's genetic. You're just a Chinese thing, right?
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Well, it's a 20th already, right?
It is, yes.
I'm hiding my head in shame.
Fertility in relation to men's health.
I think, you know, it's the whole gamut, isn't it? If you're not healthy, you're not going to be fertile. So your obesity is a huge issue among men now. Inactivity, the food you eat, the number of times you have sex because you're so stressed. I see that one of the things that Movember is looking at is men's mental health,
testicular cancer, and also prostate cancer. Yeah, at the moment, these
and
are the three.
I was
main.
Quite surprised to see that they actually focus on mental health. Mm-hmm. And one of the statistics there is that almost 50% of something, 48% or something, have had a mental breakdown at some point or the other.
Last week we talked about this. It's quite frightening. Now, in the UK, there are four men killing themselves. Committed suicide in the UK per day. Per day, and it's like, you know, we're looking at something like, you know, more than 1,800 men who committed suicide in the UK. That's quite frightening. It's a staggering figures, and then so it's rightly so that Movember kind of focus on that, and then, you know, obviously today we're looking shifting the focus a little bit, you know, to talk about the crown jewels.
Of course, how would you describe a fertile male, George?
Well, I think it's difficult to talk about fertility just talking about men. In my practice, to talk about a fertile man, you have the biochemical fertility and the real fertility. Biochemical fertility, you know, is kind of looking at the WHO definition, how many sperms and how motile they are, and also the morphology. But that's artificial, because all those figures are meaningless. Even if you have thousands and hundreds of millions, but you're not making any baby, then it's a problem. And then on the other hand, you might have a really suboptimal number, but you're making a baby, then you're not infertile. So the way that I describe fertility, I would think that it will be just looking at the number of people not making babies. So you can't separate between men and women. In Malaysia, I think, you know, I don't know, you deal with infertility issues all the time, or fertility, just to, you know, be sure that Meera doesn't throw her handbag at me or something. We're dealing with something like nearly 800,000 couple, one in 10, right?
Yeah, it is. It's the same all over the world.
That's 10%.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah,
and that's a low number.
Yeah, because in somewhere down the causeway, I told that, you know, the last time we talked about, you know, down the causeway, then it is like one in six. In the developed nation, it's one in six.
Okay. They're now saying Singapore's one in four.
Right. Okay. Ooh, that's 25%. Right.
Well, I mean, people talk about what impact it has on as a couple. But when you look at the general economics impact, that is going to put us into kind of like a graying nation that will have huge economic impacts. Because if we maintain this rate of fertility, then we're looking at by year 2030, we're looking at 15% of our general population will be above age of 60. Mm-hmm. And that will have a huge impact, obviously, on the social economic structure of the country. And therefore, to maintain that fertility is a hugely important subject.
What do you think, more and more? You know, there's this phenomenon called the disappearing sperm phenomenon. I mean, they say that, you know, sperm counts have dropped like 50% around the whole world. Is that really true?
It's true.
Are you sure?
I love to pick your brain on that. It's highly debatable.
It's true.
I know you see lots of men on the street, but actually they're disappearing. there are less and less.
Well, okay. So the sperms are disappearing and the men are also disappearing.
Slowly.
Where are they disappearing to?
Singapore? Australia? but really, let's just come back to it. It's really, really slow. But we have the data to support it. And one of the first people to point this out was the Danish group. There's a very good group in Denmark that does epidemiology, meaning they just look at numbers. And one of the things they used to do is they used to conscript young boys into the national service. And they still do. And one of the tests they used to do was a sperm test. Mm-hmm. Mm. So that later on, if they were exposed to some sort of chemical and it turned out that they became infertile, then you know, if they were going to sue you, you wanted a baseline. Mm. And over the years, they've shown very clearly that with 18-year-old boys coming in progressively, there's every year a 1% drop in sperm counts. So it's actually a beautiful linear line that starts in something like 1935 and keeps going down and down and down and down. It started at a very high number, something like about 80 or 90 million. Mm. And the minimum sperm count we now say is 15, 20 million. But we're now approaching the point of infertility for that group. Mm. And it's very clear. It's linear. You can draw a straight line across. So in the last 50 years, you've dropped 50%. Mm.
So does that mean it is still dropping
as we
speak?
It is dropping and it's getting worse.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I examined for the specialists in Malaysia when they talk about andrology and fertility. And that study, indeed, Carlson actually highlighted from 1938 until 1990, the number has dropped. But a lot of people said, you know, because their final line to say this is apocalypse of the whole mankind, you know, because these disappearing sperms are all disappearing. And then, is it true? So I always ask this question, so is there any hold to picks on this study? So some people kind of pick to say, okay, it's difficult to compare a 1938 method and also a 1990s method. Okay, I mean, it's like nitpicking and that sort of thing. And then also there are other studies, like, you know, the French study looking at all the infertility clinic, looking at 992 infertility clinic or fertility clinic. And then they're looking at the men who had allegedly no problems and the women who are supposed to be facing this problem. And between 1997 and also 2010, over 13 years, they noticed a third decline in the numbers as well. And then, but when people dissect it, they are issues like, for example, in Bordeaux, the number is up, and then in Paris, the number is down. So overall, there's a decline, but there are pockets that it's kind of increasing and also staying stable. But I agree, in a sense, that overall it is dropping, but perhaps not as dramatic as
it sounds.
But I think it's an issue. So we don't want to wait until it's so dramatic that only then we're trying to solve the problem. You know, therefore, about a month ago, the BBC came out with this kind of like some sociologists say that, look, the way to solve this problem is to freeze the sperms. Mm-hmm. And then that is the way to solve the problems, because there are many, many women who are doing that and then they're freezing embryos and things like that. I really love to dissect that a little bit with the Klang Valley listeners and also Dr. Prashant to find out, is that a way forward that, you know, since we are having this problem, why don't we just freeze it on and use it later?
Yeah. Or are you concerned? I mean, my male sperm counts are dropping dramatically, 50% down compared to what, 50 years ago, did you say?
In five decades.
Yeah. 50 it's years about ago, that. That's yeah. a lot. Give us a call, the number 03-77-109-000, tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. What do you think, Dr. Prashant? I mean, are we being overly dramatic about this?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, I started doing fertility work.
Yes, because I'm honestly panicking here. Because what happens if sperm counts continue
to
decline?
Australia.
The honest answer is that WHO keeps reducing what they say is normal. And yet the same number of people out there in the fertile group are having children. So what it means is we actually don't know what's the minimum you need to have a child.
Okay.
So we haven't reached there yet. So you can smile a bit. You
know? Okay.
Anyway, you've had your children, right?
Yes, I am. Well, yes.
But you're worried about the next generation.
Yeah, future generation. What's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, of course. And we're all worried because it's not just the number. But what's more worrying is we're actually seeing differences in what the sperm looks like, how many of them are alive. So all of that is changing.
Mm-hmm. So is motility and is morphologies are changing.
Okay, let's not assume everybody knows what motility and morphology really is. What is it?
Okay, when we assess the sperms, the health of sperms, we want a number. And WHO came up with this arbitrary number to say 15 million and above. Okay. And then on top of that, we want them 40% of them to be actively swimming in the right direction, hopefully. And then lastly, we want them at least to have a head, a neck, and a tail, okay, and then normal. And then those, we need about 4% of that, about 40% of the motility. And increasingly, we're seeing huge number of deformed sperms that is being produced. And we don't know why.
We don't know why. And we think that it's actually something to do with men or boys being poisoned very early on and their testicular function has in some way been altered.
We're going to dissect into some of the theories that, there are studies obviously looking at mobile phone, BPA, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about a little bit about that.
Okay. And meanwhile, we have Rama on the line. You have a question?
Yeah, I've got a quick question here.
Go ahead.
You talk about declining sperm counts, but what about the quality of the sperms? Has that all declined over the years?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rama. Okay, so what is affecting this deformity in this sperm? I mean,
not just deformity, even the movement, motility. How quickly they swim, how fast they swim, do they swim in the same direction, are they just going around and around in circles?
Disoriented. All of that.
They're all drunk. Very confused sperm that we have now.
I've always wondered, does the sperm have a brain?
I won't answer that, okay? Lots of men's brains are there.
Why would you think that? It's
like, what makes it, swim in the right direction?
Because they're very
they're looking
clever.
For the girls. Because, they know where the egg
sperms
is.
Sperms are just clever.
Yeah, they are.
So
clever.
They may have a brain. How would you know?
They're pre-programmed.
Then we have to decide how do you define brain, really, isn't it?
Okay, all right. So what's affecting,
Well, there are many theories. A lot of them controversial. It's very much like the climate change debate. The scientists say that we're being poisoned by lots of stuff in the environment that fetuses, not even before they're born, are being poisoned by things you call endocrine disruptors. There's a whole range of them. They're pesticides, they're fertilizers, they are from plastics, they're from things leaching into the water system, they're from estrogens. But essentially, boys are being poisoned by chemicals that resemble female hormones.
Prashant, do you think it's a conspiracy?
The thing is, I think the conspiracy is on the other side, which denies it. And so there's very little, every research that's done is then, because it's like the tobacco story. The companies that produce this will then fund some other initiative that says it's not there. Even up to today, the climate change story, you will find enough companies that are paying enough lobbyists to say that it's not happening. So it's a very confused debate. There are thousands of chemicals out there. How do you figure out which one it is? For example, BPA was banned. BPA is bisphenol, which is one of the things they
bisphenol,
use.
Bisphenol, yes.
Yeah, we did a show with a professor of pharmacology from University of Malaya, and he's convinced that this is one of the major culprits that is killing the fertility of both men and women. What's your view on that?
It's probably one of them, but how do you say that, you've got a plastic bottle, which is made with, maybe 30 or 40 chemicals. Now you've come down to one of them, but there are still another 29 or 30 left in there. So I was just reading about this last week to say that there's another group that's come out to say it's not actually the bisphenol and it actually makes no difference at all and you've banned the wrong one. How do you know what's the right one? Because the bisphenol manufacturers have all ganged up together and come up with another paper that says, no, it's not true.
Well, it's very difficult to prove or disprove that. I mean, yesterday I was interviewed by the Chinese press and then there's a Taiwan study to show that if you tapao too much, right, okay, especially in Asians, kind of setting, you put hot hot food into plastic bags and also into those white containers, and then it will cause the configurations of those chemicals to change, and then it gets absorbed faster. So they did a quite interesting randomized control trial to look at a group of people who do all your tapaos and then, you know, all the takeaways, and then with hot food, and the other groups actually don't. And then they came up with this study to show that there's significant decline in the number, in the morphology, and also motility of the sperms over a six-month period of eating the food, hot food that's kept in a plastic container.
But it couldn't be anything.
So my argument, so they asked me, you know, to comment on it, to say, well, is it true? Should we just ban it all? So my argument against that is, like, you know, for people who actually are stressed enough not to cook your own food and actually live in a fast lane like that, you're probably more stressed, you'll probably eat unhealthily, you're probably overweight, you're probably also not exercising regularly and not sleeping regularly, and those are the factors that is contributing towards the bigger picture rather than a tiny small container that actually is in your cha kway teow or something like that.
But it all adds up, I suppose. What about obesity, Dr. Prashant? I think that's a very important, huge issue.
Yeah. It's actually probably the biggest issue at the moment. We eat badly, we don't exercise, and one of the reasons that men's testicles hang out. Am I allowed to use that?
Yes.
Yeah, hang down.
Well, you just
and women's ovaries are in the body. It's simply because men produce millions and millions and millions of sperm a day. So it's a factory that's producing a huge amount. And you've got to get rid of that heat. Women produce one egg every month. Men produce 100 million sperm a day. So if you don't cool that factory down, you're going to get some issues. So as you get fatter and fatter, your testicles disappear inside your thighs and they get hotter and hotter. So that's one huge reason. And the other, of course, is we're sitting down in offices. We're not actually working. And so all of that contributes to the factory slowly beginning to shut itself down. Mm.
Okay, that's interesting.
It is quite interesting. In fact, there are a lot of studies, good quality studies actually looking at high BMI. I think that's proven. And then also exercise. And it's like, obviously, exercise probably get the circulations going and it's particularly good. And I'm interested in your view about antioxidants, And it's like, a lot of people kind of just talk about antioxidants and then to see whether that will be useful or not. And then, what do you think about men who don't really eat healthily and then, there's not enough antioxidant in their food naturally?
Antioxidants like vitamin A, C, and E.
That's right. Right. And then also natural fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, even lycopene, simple tomato or turmeric. There's a whole pile of antioxidants. But, you're producing 100 million sperm. 50 million of them are dead. They are. Even then, you'd say it's normal. So there's dead and dying sperm mixed with real good stuff there. And the dead and dying sperm are releasing toxins. And they're all mixed together. So you need to protect the good ones from being damaged by the dying ones. And that's where the role of antioxidants comes in. So there's a whole pile of them. And eating bad food, trans fatty acids particularly, there's very good studies out there that if you don't eat or if you eat too much of food, which is, biscuits, chocolates, burgers, hot dogs, processed foods, you have much poorer sperm quality just by eating that.
Well, in fact, there are a lot of studies to show that some of the processed food perhaps may contain a lot of growth hormones and also female hormone, estrogen, and things like that.
Our poultry.
That's right. When it gets into the food chain, and then not necessarily just in the meat, and then when it's in our water system and things like that, those potentially can alter the number of sperms and quality of sperm that is being produced.
Yeah, well, our mothers wouldn't let us eat the necks from chicken. Remember that?
That's true. Younger? Yeah, you're right. Because that's where they inject the pellet.
But now they put it in the food, so you can't eat anything. You can't eat a chicken.
It's all right. My mother never told me that. Is that why I'm having problems?
You've had two children, so you're all right.
All right. I'm worried about my kids right now. Just like yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I understand. So we're discussing male fertility. It is the month of November. We're discussing men's health issues. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Prashant Natkarni, fertility specialist in the studio. If you have a question for them, give us a call. The number is 03-77109.
Or you have any contribution to say how we solve this problem of the apocalypse
yes.
of, or you can text sperms. Or you can text us.
016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's our Health and Living segment Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with us. It is the month of November as well. It's our second last show in relation to men's health. We're discussing fertility today.
I think we're going to get men's health overdosed by the end of next month.
Never. I mean, the men always complain about how nobody talks about their health issues and nobody cares about them. Well, you know what? Here it is. If you're not tuning in, then it's your fault. Dr. Prashant Nadkarni, fertility specialist, in the studio with us as well. You know what? It's your chance to ask him any question you want. The number is 03-77-109-000. Give us a call. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. You know, this whole idea of couples coming to see you, Dr. Prashant, I mean, when you sit them down, how do you start this discussion about fertility? They're unable to have, to conceive, and usually the rule is you've tried with no protection for 1 year. That's the standard rule. And beyond that, then you need to go and see someone as to whether or not something's going on. So how do you approach this whole discussion with them?
Like any medical. I mean, you know, you start with the story. How old are you? I had today somebody who came in and said, I'm 48.
The male or
the woman?
A woman. Okay.
You know, and she's been married for a very long time. So
okay.
Didn't want to ask her, what have you been doing so long? But she's 48. So you start with simple things. How old are you? How long have you been married? How long have you been trying? Typical history, you know, how good health you're in. What's your husband's health? Is he overweight? Typically, they also always come in together. Then you go through the story, the periods. Are you right? You're trying to figure out where the problem may lie. And in about two-thirds, say three-quarters of the time, you'll figure it out. And half the time, it's the man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frightening because I started doing fertility work about 25 years ago. And it was perhaps one in seven couples or one in eight couples who had a male issue. Now it's half.
So we've seen that. We're seeing more and more of that. I mean, it was never part of urology. It's kind of like a spectrum of work. Mm-hmm. And then now, increasingly, we just get phone calls to say, you know, either repair the varicose seal, which we're going to cover, and also surgical technique to find that sperm. So we're the sperm hunters.
You know, it's true. You very rarely had men who had no sperm in those days. Now you have lots of men, no, I wouldn't say lots, but we certainly do see at least one a week where it's zero, and then you call Dr. George, and he opens things up and he finds a few sperm in there. So there are sperm in the testicle, but there's so few they're not being released. And that's something that
was so rare
that, you know, you look, I don't remember there's some doing things like this in those days. Mm-hmm. So we've dropped to below
the critical level.
Under zero, and now we're looking for sperm.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding them.
So you are finding
them. We are finding them in a lot of cases.
But we have to find them early because, you know, if they are just being cooped up there in those fat, like, you know, what Dr. Prashant was, you know, describing, and then, you know, you might wait. Some people wait because they said, okay, I understand, but, you know, I'm a little bit worried about financial commitment. I'm a little bit worried about, you know, being shy and all sorts of things. 5 years down the line, they might not be there anymore.
Zero. Mm-hmm. It's a downward spiral.
So we always thought the woman's fertility sort of declined as she got older. So it is happening to the man as well?
Well, no, it's not in terms of age. It's just that in the general population for men, fertility is declining. For women, it doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay.
Men, sperm counts are coming down. For men, fertility in terms of age only declines after your 70s. So until then, you're meant to be fine. That's why you see, you know, typically some people in South Africa have got 17 wives, the youngest is 17, the oldest is some, and he's 85 and he's got 30 children.
Yeah.
But men keep going forever and ever. Or that used to be the case. It's beginning to change now.
Yes, it is.
And they're all coming to Dr. George. Can you see his smile?
That's right. Okay, before they come to see me, that's right,
George.
The sperm hunter. That's my new term now. So we've got a new name now. Okay, before obviously coming to see me, you've given them advice about, you know, reducing stress, keep off your weight, exercise, don't sit too long, wear boxer shorts, and then don't go to sauna. What sort of effect would you see on those measures? And then at what point do you say, look, you know, I think you need to either consider surgery or you need to see a urologist? At what point do you start doing that?
Really, there's no change. Now, one of the problems with sperm is it takes 3 months to develop. And men typically are impatient. So if you give them something and you say, look, it's going to take 3 months, you see the face falling. Then what happens if there's no changes? You know, it's like, you've got to wait the 3 months.
Yeah,
right?
Because you need a new batch to come out,
right? It's a new batch.
So, but I stopped smoking yesterday. Right? So,
can, can I check next week?
That's right.
And can take, smoking. That's a bad one.
Yeah, and alcohol.
Yes, and don't take everything away. You know, well, leave something on the table. Soon the men will be walking in.
Alcohol might make the sperm bit confused. So you mean the wrong direction.
But it doesn't have a brain, so it doesn't matter. We're not sure if it has a brain.
Response to alcohol, actually.
Do you prescribe them anything, you know, before they send to...
There are some herbal things on the market.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no real... In the old days, we used to give them testosterone, male hormone. Give a little bit more and you produce more. The problem is that there's a fine line between just pushing the testicle to make some and then going beyond it and you actually suppress. Because testosterone in high doses is a contraceptive.
Yeah, that's right.
In China for a while, they were doing that, giving men testosterone injections to stop them having children.
Yeah. Well, that was intended. I mean, there's quite a few drugs that actually were intended just to do that.
As contraceptive.
You know, birth control.
Yeah, birth control. Mm. So, and then you get muscly men with shrinking
testicles.
Crown jewels.
This is a very interesting show.
You should get a couple of weightlifters.
Mira is imagining, the whole China turning into kind of like, you know.
That's going to change now.
Yeah, yes. It's changed already.
The one-child policy is no longer. Right. Yeah. So they can now go ahead and have children.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. George is smiling. Just stop smiling, George. They're not all coming to your door.
When I smile, I hide my moustache. You don't get to see that. I don't grow much moustache.
The imaginary one.
That's right.
You were talking about...
I'm drawing one next week.
You were saying something about 3 months for sperm to develop.
Yeah.
We cut you short.
No, well, women have periods every 28 days. So that's because they ovulate on day 14, right? So the egg is released, mature on day 14. Men take 3 months to do that. So anything that you release today started development 3 months ago, and anything that happened in those 3 months will affect that outcome. So if you were smoking in those 3 months or you had a high fever, you know, you're going to poison that sperm or you're going to see very few sperm or some abnormalities. So then when you correct it, you have to wait at least 3 months for the next new clean batch, so to speak, to come out. So when we try things, so you give them something, it doesn't work. It's 3 months to assess and say it's not working. Now let's try this, and it's another 3 months. So time passes, and men get quite upset about the whole thing. That's because the wives get upset every month. They keep banging them on the head, saying it's your fault. You were a smoker. I told you don't smoke.
Well, it takes 3 months.
What about
with
the mother-in-law?
That's right.
These days with the wife, they're quite fierce.
Are they really?
They're very fierce.
All right. Okay. Well, no wonder the men who turn up to my clinic turn up alone. It's like beaten up. Okay. Look, what's your view about this new study to show that, you know, obviously male fertility, losing weight, it's going to be helpful, but cancer drug boosting sperms? I mean, it's like, you know, this is looking at some drugs that actually is it's supposed to be you know, like breast cancer drugs, and then it's called letrozole, right? It's like, you know, what's your view on that? Because that's like antifungal, isn't it?
No, it's not. Letrozole is an aromatase inhibitor, so it's a bit like clomiphene and tamoxifen.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts working on the ovary. So what it's doing, it's blocking estrogens.
Right. Okay.
It's changing the balance between estrogen and progesterone. Now, the yin and yang, men have both. But if you have a predominance of estrogen, the female hormone, then it suppresses your testosterone, so you get less sperm. So as an anti-cancer drug, this is the next generation of tamoxifen. It actually blocks estrogen for women, so it's a good drug for breast cancer. So when you use it in men, you're also lowering your estrogen, which means that as a ratio, your testosterone is higher.
So it stops the testosterone from being broken down into estrogen?
No, it stops the estrogen from developing.
Okay.
So you get a relative excess of testosterone without giving testosterone.
So you suppress a female hormone, and then you're hoping that the male activities will be enhanced. I mean, in reality, we really don't have that many drugs to stimulate both men and women's fertility, right? You know, obviously, for IVF treatment that you're doing all the time, we need to stimulate the ovulations.
Mm.
And then we've got the drugs to do that. Do you think we're ever going to find the drugs to help men to, you know, increase that?
There's just so little research. This is the problem with men. Movember is a case in point. We're so far behind the breast cancer movement. You see the breast cancer movement so far ahead. You've got a whole month, there's, you know, activities. I was looking up the Movember website. We don't even have a Malaysian chapter.
That's right. Okay.
And there's
No, we don't.
No, no. It's
and
like,
there's
like,
so many, you know, groups here
the
in Malaysia.
The Urology Association approached them. They kind of said, well, you know, we are so busy at the moment dealing with it. We're overwhelmed and we don't actually have staff to deal with this in Malaysia. Can you believe that?
Yeah. more than that, it was a Urology Association. So it was a doctor-driven association, whereas the breast cancer movement is generally an NGO-driven. You know, it's driven by women who've either suffered it or know somebody who did have it. So in terms of men, work on men is really far behind. When
why
it comes
is that?
To,
I'm still trying to understand why.
I think men don't take it seriously. Partly until you get hit with it.
And then you don't talk about it.
And then you don't talk about it. Because, you know, you're not meant to be shooting blanks, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That goes back to the whole ego thing now,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Wow. Mm.
Well,
this is good.
How to
your
help
program,
you if you have an ego.
Well, this is the whole point. Is like, you know, a show like this, we realize that, you know, it is a common condition. I don't really think that when men can relate to that, to say that, okay, it's common, it's 1 in 6 people, 1 in 10 people, and then it will say, one in two.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, eventually,
my clinic, yeah.
And then, you know, then eventually they will realize that, okay, right, fine, okay, it's time to face it. And that's the hopefully the idea when it comes to awareness program like this.
Okay, we have a question here. I'm married for 9 years. Basically, both of us have been checked out and we have no problems. Can you provide information as to where we can get help at low cost and effectively? That's always a challenge, isn't it? It is costly. If you were to go to the private sector to get yourself checked out, what are the options?
Well, in this country, the government provides actually good services. And we assume, lots of people assume that government services are not as good as they are in the private. It isn't true. We all came from the government sector and then went into the private sector. So the services are equally good. What happens is perhaps you don't get the doctor of your choice. That's it.
And also waiting time, a little bit longer.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So I think a government hospital, so if you're asking for a specialist fertility clinic, then the UKM has a very good one. The UKM Hospital in Cheras. University Hospital's got a good one. And there's a third one here which is run by the National Family Planning Board, LPPKN. And all three of them do very good service at pretty much subsidized rates. They're university run, so they are now quasi-government, so they do collect money, but they're in many ways subsidized.
Substantially. Yeah,
and you can go in there and get very good advice and get good treatment there as well.
Okay. Now,
Prashan, for someone like this listener here, I mean, clearly checked out in the male side is all negative and then female side is all negative. If they're in a really optimal, kind of borderline age of 35, coming to see you, and then what would you do for them? You know, they say, look, the sperm count is normal. We've been trying for 8 years, still no baby. Now we're both 36 and then, you know, to help.
Fertility treatment.
Okay.
There's a range of things. Depends on where you are, what you're doing, and, you know, there's a full assessment that goes on. But in terms of sequence, by the time they come to see a tertiary level doctor at my, you know, as a fertility specialist, they've gone through the first clomiphene, things to make her ovulate and so on. So now we're looking, there are really two big groups. The first one is what we call inseminations. We take sperm, we filter it, we take out the best sperm, remove the dead ones, strengthen the live ones, and put it back into the woman's uterus.
Clever man,
tube.
Right? He's like, it's
time,
amazing, right? He can do that.
He strengthens the sperm.
Oh, yeah, you should see them. After the ribs,
so
he
puts a helmet on while on the brains and then let them swim faster.
Zooming across the slide, I tell you.
That's right.
You know exactly where to go. So that's the simplest one. And you put it back, you get the woman to ovulate, and you put it in at the time she's ovulating. So the sperm will find the egg. I'll talk to you later, Mira, about how they do that.
Okay. How they find. Okay.
And if that doesn't work a couple of times, 2 or 3 times, then typically we move on to IVF. Now, IVF is test tube treatment. You're taking the eggs out. You're making embryos. You're putting those embryos back. So pregnancy rates are high, but unfortunately they're not 100% because not every embryo implants. Just as in nature, women have intercourse every month. They still have periods, but at some point a good embryo will implant. So IVF is the same. But in one IVF and someone is 35, and here's the problem. Your pregnancy rate depends on how many embryos you put back.
Right.
So in the old days, we used to put, four or five, six, right. And say, hey, champion, you got triplets and quadruplets. But we now know that's not a
good thing. That's not allowed, right?
We don't put them voluntarily.
Normal,
so
okay.
Most of us limit ourselves to 2. So you can't have more than twins. But by doing that, you don't necessarily know that those 2 are going to implant. So pregnancy rates are slightly lower. But By the time you finish one IVF and all your embryos, including the frozen, if you're 35 years old, 80% of the time you're pregnant. Those are statistics from any good unit anywhere in the world. So it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of finance, as the gentleman said. And then, as George said, sometimes, you know, you think, I'll wait another year and I'll do something else. And then time goes on and pretty soon the 35 becomes 40. And now you're not looking at 70 to 80%, looking at 30 to 40%. Yeah. And then it halves again and so on.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the essence, really. I mean, so for those people who come to see me, I just kind of say, look, you know, I know there's a lot of pressure, but this is your biological clock. You have one window of opportunity. You really need to seize that opportunity. And one question I want to ask you is that in the UK, they always publish different centres' success rates and things like that. Do we do that in Malaysia? And what sort of success rate do you quote people? And then, you know, at what age and what sort of range? Can you explain a little bit for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. IVF or anything, women's ability to get pregnant comes down with age. And the magic age is 35. Once you cross 35, things start going downwards. So whatever you do, whether you're just trying yourself or you're going to use clomiphene, you're going to do IUI, you're doing IVF, it doesn't matter.
Is there a significant difference between, let's say, 34 and 36?
No. It's just about 3 to 4% a year. But by the time you add
5% a year.
Yeah. So if you are, say, 50% at 35, then 4% a year for the next 5 years, you take out, you know, 20, 25%, you're down to half what you were in 5 years. And then in the next 5 years, it's halved again and so on. So after 35, it's a little bit every year, but it's all cumulative and it all adds up. And so every age has a different pregnancy rate. And we have charts that we use. And generally these days, IVF is protocol driven. If you follow the protocol and do the right thing, and you have all the right facilities, anywhere in the world, you'll get the same pregnancy.
And what sort of figures do you have in, like, say, your center? And then if a typical 35-year-old couples come to see you, like this, you know, this listener here, what sort of, like, take-home baby rate would you quote someone in that situation?
Okay. And you bring a new term in, take-home baby rate. Take-home baby rate means you're pregnant, but did you take that baby home? Did you have a miscarriage along the way? We don't do deliveries where I am. So it's a bit difficult for us because a lot of people come from Indonesia. We have, you know, so you don't have numbers. So what I have is numbers at 12
pregnancy,
weeks.
12 weeks. First
we
trimester.
Look after them at 12 weeks. And then after that, most times we lose contact. And one IVF, on average, if you put two embryos back the first round, our pregnancy rate is 56%. That was what it was.
Wow. Okay.
And that's not, I don't
not
think
it's, high,
no,
but it's not bad.
It's about what it is in any good unit anywhere, Australia, UK, States. Even here, there are many units that do that. The next part is the extra embryos. We freeze extra embryos. So when you put, by the time you finish all the extra embryos, it's another one in two. So of the remaining half, another half will get pregnant. So if you add 50 plus 25, you've got 75%. So that's what it is. It's 78% in our hands.
Okay. That is not bad at all.
78% for the first trimester.
Yes.
Okay.
You will cross 12 weeks.
Let's say your gut feelings, like, you know, a good center in Malaysia, what sort of, like, if somebody who does delivery and then see the pregnancy throughout, what sort of account figures are we looking
overall,
at?
You'd lose another 10%. So you probably have about 65% delivery rate by the time you finish all your embryos, and that would be worldwide then.
Yeah. So an average couple coming to see you, you will say that you have, I know there's no such thing as average couple, but the thing is that
two out of three
you'll then you will
have
a baby.
So it's if you are 35 or under.
Right.
Now if you come at 40, that number halves.
Halves?
Yeah.
So
it's 5 years later.
A third.
Yes.
You're right. Okay, a third chance.
Yeah.
And then if you are kind of like approaching 45, that number becomes more dismal.
It's significantly lower. I think I was just showing somebody today that figure at 44 is
7%. 7%.
But would you recommend anybody trying even at that age?
Yes. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's innate in a woman. You cannot give up something until you try. You'll always come across someone who tried and had a baby. And Hello Magazine's full of it. Right? All these film stars with 43 at a time.
They bring these photographs. They're surrogate or egg donation and so on.
They're
just too posh to push the people on in Hello Magazine.
But they don't know that. And they bring this magazine and say, Doc, you told me last week, but look at this. So can I go to the States and do it? And I say, yeah, well, if I told you exactly what they'd done, then you know.
How many cycles would you carry on before you ask the woman to say, look, you know, you have that innate tendency that you long to have that baby. But you know what? Let's call it a day. When do you actually do that?
Well, I tell people, look, IVF has got two functions. The first is to obviously to give you a baby. But there's a second one. And that's the first time anyone's seen your embryos. We get in the lab over a period of between 3 and 5 days to see at the biological level what's happening. And sometimes we see things that explain what's going on. You have bad eggs, you have bad embryos, the development's bad. And you tell them, look, here's the problem. So it may not be worth doing all of this again. On the other hand, sometimes you see great embryos, everything is fine, they don't get pregnant. But that's the reality of life. People don't get pregnant every month, even in nature. And then you tell them, do it again. So that's that. The second part is, of course, the psychology. You need to allow women or couples to try before you tell them, look, it's not worth doing again. Even people who come at 44, 45, I tell them, look, this is it. But you will, if you read newspapers and magazines, come across someone who did. And then you look back and say, I wish I'd done it. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be someone like that, do it. If you accept the statistics, you may want to stop.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back and find out about mobile phones and sperm freezing very quickly. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
I love working HR, except don't know which are the panel clinics. Yes, yes, I'll send you the list. What? You need one whole day to see a doctor? BookDoc is here to help you. It allows your employees to access panel clinics, check doctors' availability, and reduce wait time at the clinic. They can make appointments anytime, anywhere. Visit BookDoc.com. That's BookDoc.com. Healthcare appointments at your fingertips.
Hey Jade, can you find out who's launching the latest A-Phone exhibition?
There you go.
Jade, do you know when the business talk in KLCC is?
Yes, next Tuesday, 7 p.m.
Jade, where's the e-commerce
it's
conference
in Subang.
Hey Jade.
Hi Joyce, I know what you want to ask. The Manufacturing Expo. It'll be in town.
How do you know all this?
Yeah.
How?
Well, tune into Small Biz Bites, bite-sized SME happenings providing you insights and network for your business. Mondays, 10:40 a.m. only on Enterprise.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's Movember and we're discussing male fertility today with Dr. Prashant Nadkarni, who's a fertility specialist, and Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're discussing how, you know, sperm counts are dropping throughout the world. 50% is an alarming rate, a combination of factors contributing to this falling rate of sperm. We're talking about the health of the sperm, which is not really the best at the moment. You need to eat well, stop smoking, do all the right things. We have a very quick question here on if you can explain the relationship between cycling and male fertility. Some believe it is caused, cycling causes infertility, and some believe the other way around. So what are your thoughts on this?
George, you took the first breath.
Cycling is always related to prostatitis. You know, it's like, you know, whenever the saddle is actually pressing on the perineum, which is between the scrotum and anus, and sometimes can cause inflammation in the prostate. And the inflammation in the prostate sometimes can reduce the number of healthy sperms that is being ejaculated. So there are association with that. But increasingly, they are catering for men who have problem with prostatitis and have special bespoke kind of like saddles so that they will have less problem with prostatitis and less problem with infertility.
Okay, the mobile phones, how dangerous are they?
Controversial.
Still controversial.
It's very controversial. There are some studies that show clear differences and some that show none. And it's beginning to appear as though it depends on the type of mobile phone you're using. So the older
the
ones...
The brand.
No, here's the brand conscious guy.
That's right. It's going to turn
out. I too.
But it's the older ones. Yeah. Mine switched off. I've got three kids to prove. So.
And it's got a handkerchief between there. That's what lead handkerchief.
Filter.
That's right.
Filter.
I didn't see many men using handkerchief these days. That's such a gentleman, you know.
It is. Yeah. There's a purpose for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just to give the ladies to wipe the tears.
So what's the verdict?
Well, the verdict is it probably is true, and it probably is true for men who keep their phone in their pockets or people who keep their laptops on their thigh when they're working. You see, when you make a phone call, if you hold it against your brain, your head, it's not in your pocket. So the electromagnetic radiations up here, and then they say you get brain tumors. But that's a crowd that keeps it in their pocket and then uses a Bluetooth and a Bluetooth in your ear.
Or hands-free.
Hands-free. And that's actually in your pocket. And it appears that it affects sperm only when it's switched on and working, not when it's resting. So if you have it in your pocket all the time and you're making phone calls with your Bluetooth or your hands-free...
But these days there's no such thing as resting, right? Because you're constantly receiving messages and that sort of things. Like, you know, and then
it should be in your hand then, on the table.
Well, so it's either your sperm count or your brain.
That's right. Yes.
One of it.
Wow, yeah. So have to switch to the Os Thou Nokia then.
Exactly.
So
the verdict's still out there. Still not terribly sure.
But I think we're slowly getting to the point where we say, don't put it in your pocket and make phone calls. Hold it against your ear, because then you go and see the neurosurgeon, not the fertility specialist.
Look after the sperm that way. Mm. And what about the last one we were discussing is whether or not we
freezing
should be freezing
the sperm. Come on. In the spirit of Movember, we need to have a solution, right? We know that there is this kind of like a drying ammunition of a man, you know, because we're firing blanks now, you know. So we need to have a solution, right? Okay. So this guy, you know, in BBC, the health report that was on... 25th of June, said that, you know, this is a bioethicist. I didn't even realize. I don't even know what that means. That urges men free sperms at the age of 18. We've heard a lot about women, you know, climbing the career, right? You know, the career ladder, and then decide that they need to freeze their eggs or freeze their embryos, you know, if they are in a relationship. And then, you know, when this came out, you know, everyone bombarded the bioethicist with this, to say this is a crazy thing to do. And I would like your opinion on that, because, you know, if the girls can do it, should the boys do it? And what sort of world do we have? And in fact, before I came here, I discussed with Jean Wu about, you know, about this. Jean is our colleague who also deals a lot with fertility. And she was telling me that if we have something like this, we have so many people freezing their samples. And then she has about 20 years of, she called it garden of embryos and gametes. And we have no idea what to do with them. And then just like, you know, she asked me to send, she sends her regards and asked me to ask you this question and ask for your comment.
I fully agree. I think this is just over the top.
Freezing at a young age. And why bioethicists? Because they feel that, you know, as we have children older, the risk of, you know, older men having children, it affects the future generation in terms of genetic disorders.
I think it just, you know...
This is your
ridiculous.
Banking. This is saving your...
We're just going to have this building full of sperm, and a lot of men are just not going to come and claim it, because they're going to go out, get married and have a child of their own and then leave the sperm in your bank. So the answer to that is no. Not unless you need it. I mean, you know, if you're going to have treatment for testicular cancer, you're going to be irradiated for leukemia, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I think in every other situation, no.
You know, the argument this guy came up with, I actually did a really thorough search on PubMed to find out, is there any study to show that if you freeze your sperm at early stage, at 18, let's say, for example, and you decide to get married at age of 78 with a 25-year-old woman, would that protect you against the problems about, you know, having genetic disorder, autism and that sort of thing? In fact, there's no study to show that. So, but it's theory. It's the theory that actually is proposed by this guy. I mean, so what I want to see is that, do you come across women who want to freeze their eggs and also their embryos? And what difference is that with a man trying to do that?
Regularly. Not only that.
And regularly? Again, you said regularly.
Regularly.
Seriously?
Yeah. Regularly. That's because in America, there's a big move. And Apple and Facebook have now told all their women employees that if they want to freeze eggs, they will pay for it. All right, so there's a move already.
We were shocked.
So then the bioethicists have come out again and said, yeah, that's Apple and Facebook being cynical. They just want the women to work longer and not get married. That's why they're freezing. So you can't do a good deed without being caught.
So you have women who come to see you to freeze it.
Well, the reality is, we spoke about the 35-year-old magic age. If you don't get pregnant and have your child before 35, many things happen. You may get pregnant, but you may still have many, many complications along the way and so on. So the ideal, of course, is get pregnant before 35. But if you can't, either you don't have a partner or it's not the right time, your fertility begins to drop. Men don't drop till they cross 70. They've stopped working.
But people don't know whether they're going to get married at 35 or not. They kind of make that decision at age of 25.
So women will make that decision at 35 and freeze because there's no one in sight. You freeze your fertility then. So even if you come back at 40, your fertility is still stuck at the age of 33 or 34.
All right, so you're getting women freezing at 35 rather Correct. Than 28 or something like that.
Yeah.
So
is there an ideal age for fatherhood?
Sooner the better, I think. You don't want to be 74 running around, you know, changing diapers. You know. Your grandchild is fine.
Well, when
you're
74, you can afford to get someone else to change the diapers for that.
Yes, I suppose.
Depends where you live. Not in the UK, you don't.
Is there a link between older fathers and children who have disorders?
Yeah, autism, yes. There's a clear... Well, it appears that there's a link. Autism is fraught because it's just such a wide spectrum. And many things... including genetics come in. But there does seem to be a link between older fathers and boys who have autism in the next generation.
What is your definition of older father?
Now, be careful.
Yeah, correct. George, what's your age, George?
I'm 40.
plus 10
I'm 46.
Years.
Plus 10 years. Okay, 56. All right, that's
I think
all right.
65 and above.
65 and above?
Yeah.
Okay, all right then.
So that'll all right.
Fantastic.
That's plus 10 years for me as well.
We're running out of time. Your message this Movember on fertility, Dr. Prashant?
Well, you know, eat well, be healthy, exercise, you know, and have children early. Same thing to tell everyone.
Dr. Joe.
No, I want to be a bit poetical and answer. I'm going to give a quote from Macbeth, right?
Okay.
If you can look into the seeds of time and say which grain will grow and which will not, speak then to me. Right. So in the spirit of Movember, I think the seeds of love, I think we can never really tell what will grow and what will not. However, I think more research should be done. You know, to catch up with a woman's health.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. Dr. Prashant Nadkarni, fertility specialist, and Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.